When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey everyone, it's Ben from Gravity. Real quick before we get into today's episode, a quick announcement for you. If you listened through all the way to the end of our last episode with Casey Tigrette on his new book, The Gift of Restlessness, you will know that we are in partnership with Broadleaf Books running a book giveaway. Two free copies of Casey's new book were offered by Broadleaf very generously to our listeners. And so we invited y'all to email us if you would like to be entered into that contest. So over the last week, we have collected those email addresses from everybody who entered the contest and wanted to announce the winners. Our winners are, drum roll, please. I do have some sound effects, but I don't think I have a drum roll, unfortunately. Anyway, just imagine a drum roll happening right now. Great. Our winners are Alan Morton and Tristan Ferry. So thanks to everybody who entered the book giveaway. And congratulations to our winners. We'll reach out to you via email to get your mailing address. And listen to our podcast. Maybe we'll do stuff like this in the future. It's kind of fun to give away books. And we're happy to give away Casey's book to Alan and Tristan. It's a very good book. So anyway, that's it. That's the announcement. On to the episode.
Heyo, everybody.
Hey, hey.
Greetings.
You heard the voices of Christy Penley and Ben Sternke. I'm Matt Tebbe, and we are having a little chat today about something that we do all the time, which is all of us are all the time parenting.
100% of the time.
Christy,
never not parenting.
100% of the time. Christy's got six children.
I sure do. Mm-hmm.
Ben's got four, mm-hmm. but some of them are adults.
Yes.
Christy, some of yours are adults too.
Right. Yeah.
And then I've got two. And recently, I've been thinking a lot about how challenging it is as a parent to not only figure out how to love your kid in the way that they need, but then as soon as you kind of figure something out, like your kids change.
Oh, yeah.
And my son has recently hit puberty, and all puberty is breaking loose. And I no longer feel like I know what I'm doing and what he needs and how to connect with him. So we thought it would be, I don't know, appropriate just for us maybe, and listener, maybe for you, to chat about, temptations or pitfalls in parenting, ways that we maybe find ourselves parenting that are not effective or less helpful, and then using that as a springboard to chat about what we've learned through all our mistakes. So, Christy, you're gonna kind of lead us here today, yeah?
Yeah, you know, someday I'm going to write an article. And then this is going to be about this. Yeah.
We're talking about
but not today.
But not today. We're just talking about it today. Yeah. This is how I process. Paul and I mean, I think just with our six kids, ranging from 24 to 10, there are just a lot of mistakes that we've made. A lot of mistakes that we made. And so all of these things that we're going to talk about, we are bringing to the table because we've done them. We are doing them and trying to learn instead and do it a different way, a better way, where we don't parent just for behavior, but we actually are parenting for character development. Because behavior is like really sometimes just what I want. Get in the car, put your seatbelt on, get your shoes on, whatever.
Compliance.
Right. But if I sit back and think about it, no, I do want the heart. I want, you know, I want to be proactive than reactive. But that takes some intentionality. And in this case, like for us, just a lot of learning and doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, so listener, then just a signal to y'all, we are going to share, you've written down like seven pitfalls or seven pitfalls. And I just want the listener to know, like, if some of these are on the nose for you, if you feel like we're reading your mail, take a deep breath. Like, we want there's going to be some hope in this, but first we want to commiserate with how difficult it is to parent, and name some of the things that your intuition probably already tells you. Gosh, there's got to be another way to do this. So,
I think that's really good. Maybe we can just even remind listeners as we go that it is the first part of any change process is sort of naming reality, naming what's happening. And oftentimes the reason we don't want to name what's happening is we feel ashamed or frustrated about that, and it feels easier to not look at it. You know, it's kind of square in the face. So. Anyway, deep breaths can help, as Matt said, to just look at it.
I'll be breathing. Say
it's okay. Like, there's no condemnation in this. There's only compassion, and then hopefully some change on the horizon. So,
all right. Well, Christy, why don't you name the seven, and then we'll just go one by one.
Yeah. So these seven what we called parenting mistakes that we've done. One is talk parenting, bribe parenting, excuse parenting. Shame parenting, which unfortunately is very effective, hover parenting, blind parenting, and backwards parenting.
All right. Ooh. Talk, bribe, excuse, shame, hover, blind, backwards.
That's right.
Let's start with talk, which I don't know what you got against talking, Christy.
Yeah, I was going to say, is the answer for this one just stop speaking to your children?
Maybe unpack that a bit. What are you referring to when you talk about talk parenting? Give us a story or how that goes down.
Yeah, talk parenting is kind of repeating yourself with no expectation of actual obedience. And so like your toddler's at the table and you're like, they get up from the table and they are just start walking away from dinner. And you kind of say, get back in your chair and finish your meal. And they have no intent to actually like get back in the chair and finish their meal, and they just keep on walking. And so then you say it again, like, hey, Lucy, come on back. And then, you know, you just keep saying it, but you're not actually like, there's no change. Yell parenting is just a louder version of this, right?
I was going to say yell parenting. So it sounds like, Christy, this one has to do with you're trying to – you're basically just, you're assuming, sort of unknowingly assuming, or implicitly you're assuming that the problem is the child didn't hear you, right?
But they don't actually, like, there's no follow through for actual obedience, in the kid's mind. And the result of that is that the child learns to ignore your instructions.
Right. What you say doesn't actually matter.
Yes. This is also referred to in our house as get off the shed parenting. Remember that old Will Ferrell skit from Saturday Night Live? I'm resonating with this, Christy. Like, we're trying to teach our kids how to use electronics, screens, etc. well. And so my 14-year-old has a cell phone that he bought and has a limited sort of data package on. And then my daughter, who's 11, has an old phone that she uses on Wi-Fi to... She loves to shoot videos of herself, like dancing or doing makeup, etc. And I find myself saying, "Will you please get off your phone?" about 75 times a day,
right.
And I get trapped in this talk parenting thing, that like the request or the command seems to be increasingly just ignored. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, the question begs is like, okay, what's the antidote? What do we do with this? And please hear me, listener. I'm not giving you the antidote because we do this every time. But I think this is like, as we process through so much of our talk parenting to our six kids, we're realizing that, oh, well, immediate and consistent action is really the antidote to just talk parenting. If if Lucy gets up from the table and walks away, and I get up out of my chair and say, bring her back to the table and say, hey, sweetheart, we're going to sit at the table and finish dinner, and then you can play with toys. But if I just let her do her own thing, which let me just say, parenting is tiring, right? We get exhausted and getting up from the table and bringing her back to the table is like, I don't want to do that. I just want her to listen to me. Mm-hmm. So that's where yell parenting comes in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but it takes effort. It takes intentionality on our part to have immediate and consistent action in whatever we're saying to them.
Yeah. So there's a, and that's on the part of the parents is saying, treat your words like they matter. Like they actually, like we're actually in a conversation and we're trying to communicate here. And if they are ignored, well, you know, then take some action, that is commiserate with being ignored, you know, which, you know, when your kids are older, I'm just thinking about my kids are older. Actually, my youngest daughter just turned 18. And, so I think I have four adult children. I think I put that in my bio now, you know. But, you know, obviously when it's Lucy getting up from the table, our fictional child here who, you know, wants to go play, I think it's different with, you know, little kids, like little toddlers, where you can actually pick them up, right, and put them in their car seat, put them places, right? That I think is appropriate action. When they're older, obviously, the action I think needs to be something different. And for me, it's always felt helpful to have a different kind of conversation. And for me, I usually have to admit my frustration to my child. Hey, I find myself frustrated because I'm repeating the thing that I am wanting to get across to you, but it doesn't seem to be getting across to you, and it doesn't seem to be helping. So can we talk about that? Can we talk about that dynamic? Can you tell me what's going on for you when you hear me say this? What's happening for you? You know. And oftentimes that opens up something new, and we can have a conversation about the conversation that we were having that's not working.
Right.
Okay.
Our kids have, some of them have technology. And I was just talking to a mom the other day, and she was saying that her 14-year-old keeps asking for more time on his phone. Like, you know, there's limits as to how often he can text or, you know, whatever the things are. And it becomes this constant thing. And she's like, I have said it 100 times. Like, you get the 1 hour, and then after the 1 hour, there's no more. Like, but she's like, he just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And I'm like, okay, well, what's immediate and like action that you could take when he keeps asking for that? And so she came up with, like, every time he asks for more time, she's taking 5 minutes away. And so it's like just going down, right? And I tell you what, about one day of that and like 35 minutes of decreased time later, boyfriend isn't asking over and over and over. He knows that when mom says you get 1 hour, that is your time. And she's being consistent in that. But that's hard. Yeah, it's really hard.
It is hard. Sometimes I feel like I need a parent as I'm parenting, you know?
Yes.
All right. So talk parenting, number one, the get off the shed parenting. Number two, you said bribe parenting. I think I know what this is. Give us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. This is where you promise a special reward for standard behavior.
Standard behavior.
Stop,
like if you eat your dinner or stop screaming at me, I'll give you candy.
Yes. Yeah. Get in your car seat and buckle in and I'll give you French fries. Yeah. Or if you like are just obedient to me right now, then later on this week, I'll take you to Trampoline World or whatever the thing is. Yeah. And you're just like, no, these are just normal things that everybody has to do. You got to get in the car. Mm-hmm. You got to put your shoes on, you know, whatever. And really that is just training your child to disobey until they get something for themselves.
Yeah.
Ugh. Gosh.
We saw this a lot. Probably you see it a lot with toddlers, like little kids when they're like kind of screaming and throwing temper tantrums. But the reality is like teenagers can do this too. They can throw a teenage temper tantrum and,
mm-hmm.
and parents are just like, stop doing that. And then I'll give you something. Yeah. And so I think the antidote is recognize uncoerced character, like really celebrate the character things that you see in your kid when they don't even know that you're watching.
Yeah.
And so we have like a chalkboard thing that I write everybody's name on. And we like put prayer requests and all this kind of stuff. Well, when I see my kid, any of them, even my 24-year-old, which is kind of funny, he still wants to be a part of this. Mm. When I see him doing things that are just beautiful and good and like he's not doing it because mom and dad are watching whatever, then there's like stars on the chart. And then we do something special for the kid later on once I see like, oh, like Soren did this thing for his sister or helped his brother with his math homework or whatever the thing is, and wasn't asked to do it. You're just being kind, you're being a giver. And so actually just yesterday Soren had a morning off. And so I took him to Chick-fil-A and like, let's just have breakfast together. Yeah. I've seen these things in you and I just want to celebrate them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that I, you know, a lot of my parenting reflections are often sort of, thinking about things I wish I would have done differently. You know, kids are older now and there's some things that you can kind of correct, but then the other thing that you're like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's probably part of why they're in therapy now. So, but only a little. But I think one of the things that I read recently about, and this relates to bribing kids, one of the things I read recently that really resonated with me was kids oftentimes, like we oftentimes will think of our kids as these little like selfish monsters who are just trying to like get candy, that kind of a thing. And there was a kind of a paradigm shift in what I was reading where they said kids think they want candy. Like kids are like us where they think they know what they want that's going to fulfill, you know, these deep desires that they have. But their desire is for connection. It's for belonging. Yeah. It's for relationship. Like that is actually what kids want. They don't just want candy. They just want to feel good. And, you know, candy sort of like makes them feel good. And so that's what they think they want.
Yeah.
And a big part of parenting, you know, that I wish I could have like parented my kid when they were younger, thought of them as people who needed connection from me, people who needed, you know, that kind of a thing. And I think one of the reasons that bribe parenting is a mistake is that we sort of buy into the paradigm that says that actually what these kids want and what they and the good things that come to them are gifts, candy, money, you know, like the things that we try to bribe them with. We almost reinforce that for them to say, yeah, this is good. This is the good thing that I'm going to give you. When actually maybe the good thing that we can give them is our attention, our care, you know, our compassion, connecting with them when they're throwing a temper tantrum because they have this need that's not being met, you know, but it's not a need for candy. You know, it's a need for connection. Anyway. And now a word from a sponsor. The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I'll just say this here, like bribe parenting can be really effective in the short term.
Yeah, it can.
Like if I'm looking for immediate motivations to get kids to do what I want, I can come up with a bribe to do that. I think for me, what I notice is twofold. One, it shifts the balance of power really away from kind of the, it offloads a responsibility that I have to love my kid into this transactional negotiation of I will respect you and honor you if you give me something. Right. And I think that over time can be a really, I don't know, it's not the kind of relationship I want with anybody, really. Mm-hmm. Right. And the other part of this is one of the things I'm learning, and we might talk about this later, is like when my kids do good in school, I used to say, I'm so proud of you. And I've read some stuff about how praising kids for doing well in school actually increases insecurity and anxiety.
Right. Yeah.
And I've been experimenting with, hey, you worked really hard on that. You should be really proud of yourself.
Yes.
So that there's not an external or an extrinsic motivation for doing well in school, but there is learning to tap into an intrinsic, internal motivation for doing well. And I think that's the second part of this bribing thing that makes me uncomfortable, even though it's can work so well, is that I actually want a relationship of mutuality and trust with my kids. So that when I ask them to do something internally, they're learning to say yes versus I'll do this for you if you give me what I want. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So talk parenting, bribe parenting. The third is excuse parenting.
Yes.
All right, Christy. What's this?
Excuse parenting is, you know, kind of allowing some sort of excuse or whatever to just dictate why your child is doing the behavior that they're doing. For example, your 16-year-old gets a speeding ticket and the response is, well, they're 16. What else do you expect? They're a teenager, right? Mm. Your infant, you know, the 15-month-old throws a toy at another kid's face and they're like, well, they didn't have a nap, so they're just tired. Right. And so we just excuse behavior. One time I was in a play area and another kid bit my child and the parent said, oh, well, they're teething. And I'm like, they're teething. They just like broke the skin of my kid's arm. Like, let's not just like say that that's okay. And basically, I think in that you're just training your child that the whole world gets to adapt around them and what they want and how they are.
Well, they never learn.
So you basically are just making excuses for your kids for their bad behavior.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
They never learn accountability, right? You know, they can't.
Right.
There's always some reason outside of my own, like is what we teach our kids is there's always some reason outside of your control for the things that you do. And so you should never have to say you're sorry for something, right? Or you should never be held accountable for actions, even if you were hangry, you know, or teething.
Exactly.
That makes sense to me. So,
I'm noticing my brain immediately goes to sort of the other side of the coin of this or the corollary. So, for instance, I've as an adult was diagnosed with ADHD, and there were a lot of ways that presented in my life that as a young kid of impulse control and distractibility, saying whatever came to mind, and often it was inappropriate. I'm so thankful I've gotten over that. But as a kid,
you never do that anymore.
it would have been really helpful for me and those who are caring for me to have some why about why that was happening. Mm-hmm. So Christy, to make excuses, but to, you know, like for instance, kids now are given fidget spinners mm-hmm. so that they can fidget with something so that they can be more calm and present. So how do we, so that's different though than like, well, my kid's teething, so he's going to bite you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, bro, your kid's 15, stop biting me. You know, like how do we...
Well, I think the difference is like parents in excuse parenting are using excuses to disengage from responsibilities of actually forming their children's mm-hmm. character. Yeah. Right?
Okay.
If you are ADD and you need a fidget spinner to focus, that actually is engaging mm-hmm. as a parent to help your child learn, right? But if you're just excusing, like if instead of using a fidget spinner, if they're like punching the kid in front of them and you're like, hey, this is not going to be acceptable. Yeah. Let's use this fidget spinner. Right. And so I think the antidote of that is really educating to do constructive things, and you got to do it together.
Yeah.
So it's the parent, you know, being proactive, being engaging to really help the child rather than just make up excuses for allowing them to do whatever they're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's because this is one of these mistakes that I, you know, didn't tend to do with my kids. I did the opposite. I made no excuse. There's no excuse for bad behavior, right? but I can see the wisdom in what you're saying, Matt, that there, you know, there might be reasons that bad behavior sort of manifests itself. And I think it is possible to do both things, right? It's possible to both compassionately connect with maybe underlying causes, you know, whether that's ADHD or just the lack of a nap or teething or whatever it might be, that you can compassionately engage with that and empathize, and also call people into like how do you deal with this appropriately so that you don't hurt people, so that you don't, you know, end up, you know, creating difficult situations for yourself and for others. Yeah.
Yeah. Chrissy, can I share something about this? Right, I mentioned my 14-year-old.
Yeah,
you know, and how his personality has changed with the onset of puberty, and my wife and I go back and forth. I'm like, I want to figure out a way to connect with my son. He gives me one word answers. He doesn't seem like he wants to spend time with us. And my wife will say, "Well, he's just 14. Like, 14-year-olds go through this," and part of me is like, "Okay, that would be really good news if this is just a phase and his small body is learning how to accommodate all these big hormones, right?" Mm-hmm. But the fear I have is that that's just excusing behavior that's not due to puberty. And I actually don't know. Yeah. Like, right. I actually don't know what good parenting looks like in a liminal space of a kid entering puberty at an eighth grader at 14, who's dealing with a whole lot of stuff, and what is me making excuses for behavior that I shouldn't tolerate, and what is me accommodating to behavior that is normal, and that is just part of somebody differentiating from their parents.
That's good. It's really good. And since Ben has four adult children, I'm sure he has an answer for us.
Mm-hmm. Ben.
I don't know. I resonate.
All right, number five.
I'm gonna say, yeah. Sorry, guys. Teenagers are a mystery, a black hole of undiscovered. No, I think I would say though that I had to learn to relax, like when my kids were teenagers, about just the, you know, the one word answers, the that kind of a thing. I had to use our language that we teach people in our spiritual formation process. I had to process my own kairoses that came up for me. Because oftentimes it's easy for me to perceive their one-word answers.
To internalize their behavior?
Yeah, or like...
To take it personally?
Yeah, to take it personally, and therefore then to treat it as if it's worse than it actually is, right? And so, you have to respect me, you know, that kind of response to, you know, somebody who's just feeling... like their bodies are filled with hormones and they feel depressed and they, you know, like that kind of thing. I had to process my own kairoses and say, okay, this is about me. I got my feelings hurt by my teenager again. And I have to process that instead of just expecting them to not hurt my feelings. Like, I've got to process that. And that's, it's okay what they're doing. It's not, you know, it's not terrible behavior. It's, you know, maybe less than social and less than what I'd like, but
yes.
But for the most part, that has been temporary, especially as my kids got in. I've got two kids in their 20s, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, their personalities come back, and they, you know, like, they're great. They're some of my favorite people. I love hanging out with my kids. So,
all right. Well,
I don't know.
That's encouraging. I'll hold on to that hope. We need to, that was number three, talk, bribe, excuse. Okay. We're going to go on to number four, but I just want to put a, like a bookmark or a footnote in here for the listener. About a year ago or so, maybe more, I did an interview with Eric Minton on his book, It's Not You, It's Everything.
Yes.
And his book is about how our culture creates a lot of the mental health challenges that we face and experience. And in that book, he talks about parenting that reverses the flow. So he talks about parenting, ideal parenting is you as the parent giving your kids what they need for them to grow and flourish and develop. He said, but parenting that reverses the flow is parenting that uses your kids to get your needs met.
Yes. Mm,
yeah.
And I just want to, I recommend this book. It's really good. But also that little discussion in our podcast keeps coming to mind for me. I think that if I could sum up the antipathies in my below average parenting, it's when I try to get my needs met from my children. Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Almost every time.
Yep. That's really almost good, Matt. That's really good. And
yeah, well, and not for them, it isn't.
No, not for them, but like that you can name that, that you see that and name that and are working through that. Because when I see that in me, it's so gross. I'm like, shoot. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I do not want this. And I don't want this for them and I don't want this for me.
Right.
Right.
Right. All right. Well, maybe you could say that we experienced some shame in that, Christy, and that is the fourth type of parenting.
Yeah, shame
great
parenting.
Great segue.
It's it's demanding obedience before you will be kind to your kid again. And it's effective, especially for some kids who have certain personalities. It can be really effective. So it looks kind of like here's one I've done. You know, my kids are getting ready to go out the door and they're having a hard time, whatever the thing is, getting their shoes on, getting their coat on, getting their backpack. And now we're 10 minutes late. And I've literally said to them, you have made us late. It is your fault.
Yes.
Right. Yes. More extreme is when your daughter comes home pregnant and you say, what are the Smiths going to think now that you got yourself pregnant?
Yeah. Right.
And it's shame parenting.
Yeah.
Right.
And the result is you train your child to believe that they're loved only when they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Or withholding affection, withholding attention, withholding yourself as a way of like passive aggressively shaming them so that they then have to perform or move towards you to re-engage or re-earn, et cetera. Yeah. So like I noticed that in me is like I will this is like one of my least desirable attributes. I'm going to just share it with everybody, is that I tend to do a lot of pouting. I pout. I really hate it. But I also love it in Jesus's name. Amen. I pout. And pouting with my kids looks like sulking and withdrawing from them. And then making them responsible to massage and manage and placate me.
Yeah. We just, our oldest.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. I just want you to know.
I can relate. I'm with you. In fact, I mean, this is something I'm working through right now. So this is just, maybe it feels a little vulnerable. Maybe how you're feeling too, Matt. But
yeah.
We just went on spring break. It was so fun. And before spring break, my oldest, an adult, went to go see a girl, a friend that's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they like
a girlfriend?
Yeah, what did you say? Christmas words together.
This is a podcast I can't publicly say. I don't know if that's like official, but anyway, he went and he missed part of our family vacation. And I was pissed. I was mad. And he came late. He flew in and he was with us. And I'm telling you guys, it probably took me 3 days. I messed up. I was having a great time with the other five children. And with him, I was just pouting, angry, like withholding. I can see it now. You know, I was excusing it as like, I'm figuring out my stuff. Like I can make it sound so spiritual. Right. But the reality was, it was just shame parenting to a 24-year-old and who chose to do something that I didn't want him to choose to do. And I wanted him to apologize 15 times before I would actually forgive him and move on.
Yeah.
And it's ugly. Yeah. It's really ugly.
Yeah. I think the one, you know, how I said that I didn't make the excuse parenting mistake. This, you know, this is one I probably majored in. You're right. It's uncomfortable to talk about it. And I think part of the reason it's so effective is that it's so devastating, right? Yeah. It's like, it's so effective at, and when you say effective, I mean, just to be clear, I think everybody knows, but you're not saying like truly effective parenting, but it's effective at enforcing compliance or getting kids to do what we want, like in the moment, right? And I think part of the reason is it's so devastating for kids to implicitly or explicitly receive the message that like at your core, you aren't lovable and you're like, you're not okay, you know, and you have to do something besides be yourself to be loved and to be accepted. And that I think is why it's so effective, is it's just so devastating for kids. And I think the other thing, this is just a discovery that I made through, you know, therapy just growth, was that oftentimes it stems from my own shame. Like, you know, that's the reason that we end up shaming others, including our kids, is we don't have a sense of our own lovability and our okayness, right? And when we end up, as you were saying before, Matt, like we end up sort of shaming others to try to get them to not do things that bring up our own feelings of shame, right? So the classic example is the kid who's not obeying. And so I feel the shame of like, maybe I'm a bad dad. Maybe that's what that means. You know, I'm a terrible parent. So I feel that shame when they disobey my instructions. And so in order to prevent me from feeling that, I try to shame them into obeying. Does that make sense? So there's like this projection thing that happens. And I think it's, you know, we got to deal with our own sense of shame before we're going to be able to actually get out of this pitfall.
Yeah. And to parent for character development rather than just immediate obedience or whatever, it means that we have to differentiate our children's choices from their identity, right? For them and for us. Yep. And so their choice isn't who they are, whether that's like, you know, in a case where, you know, a child chooses to do the wrong thing, that's still not their identity. It's a poor choice. Yeah. But they're not a bad kid. Yeah. And we need to speak that over them. We need to model that, but we also need to believe that ourselves.
Yeah. I just want to bring back, you know, It's Not You, It's Everything. That's a book that Eric Minton wrote, but it's also something that I've like fairly recently just been coming to grips with, is like the kid who disobeys. So for example, we oftentimes immediately and instinctively attribute that to like 100% of the responsibility for that behavior is located inside the child, right? It stems from their own, you know, whatever, you know, just it stems from inside the child. But I think what we're learning is that there are tons of environmental factors. There's tons of cultural factors that go into the ways that we are, you know, like mentally unhealthy and struggling, and you know, even health thing, like there's all kinds of reasons located outside the child for all kinds of bad behavior, you know. And I think it's really, really important to just keep that in mind, that like we live in a society that is inhospitable to these kinds of relationships, and so we are working against the grain always if we want to have you know, a good relationship with our kids and parent well, or if we want to like be Christians and like love one another well, we are working against the grain of our culture, and we have to keep that in mind, that's it's not all located inside of people.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
all right.
You may need to hit pause on this podcast and go scream into the abyss. call your adult children and apologize.
Yeah,
hug your little toddler or sleeping infant.
We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get back to the show. I just want to again say these things are hard to talk about because we do feel a lot of guilt and shame, yeah. Insecurity, insufficiencies. Yeah. And you're okay, listener. Mm-hmm. You're okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the ways that God's love is sovereign is that God holds all of this and you.
Yeah.
And so continue to take deep breaths. We've got... Four three down more. And three to go.
Three more.
Number five is hover parenting.
Yeah. Hover parenting is when you do for your kid what they should learn to do for themselves.
You're saying I shouldn't be wiping my 14-year-old's butt?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, good. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But
this just confirms that I've made the right choice in that case.
I'm killing it right now. When he gets off the bus today, I'm going to be like, guess what?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Is this similar to what I've heard also called helicopter parenting?
Yeah. Like Love and Logic kind of does like a helicopter parent thing. Okay. It's, you know, when you apologize to a babysitter because your children misbehaved, and rather than having your child apologize I recently actually was talking to a college student and She failed out of her freshman year. Mm-hmm. And she came home and I said, tell me what happened. And she's like, well, my dad did all my homework in high school.
Wow.
He wrote all my English papers.
Holy cow.
Right. And so he didn't teach his child to take responsibility and just did it for her. And so I think the antidote to this is natural consequences. You know, if that freshman in college would have learned her freshman year in high school, how to write a paper, mm-hmm. how to have an argument and be able to do grammar and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
She, you know, it would have really helped her. I mean, mm-hmm. she might have not done great in a freshman English class in high school, but she would have been able to go through college.
Yeah.
And so I think there is a good place for natural consequences for kids. And, and it teaches that they've got to take some responsibility for themselves.
Yes. Yes, it is super hard to watch your kids fail and struggle. And it's a big temptation, I think, you know, for good reasons. Like you care about your kids. You don't want them to fail. You don't want them to struggle. And
right.
So let me just take care of this for you. And so this is one that we're, and this, I think it takes a lot of calibration and willingness to sort of just make a mistake and not, you know, not realize, oh, this is something that they could have handled or should have handled. And that kind of thing. And I've noticed this as our kids. So our youngest now is getting ready to go off to college or something next year, not high school. You know, it's like there's something different is happening for her. And my wife and I have found it interesting to try to navigate how much help do our kids need, right? To sort of get on their feet. Like what do they need from us that would actually empower them to grow in responsibility, become, you know, fully self-sufficient adults. Mm-hmm. Like, and what is us like making excuses for them or propping them up, you know, when they need to learn how to walk on that leg instead of use the crutches forever. So it's hard to know sometimes, but I think just having the awareness of there is such a thing as taking too much responsibility is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things I notice is that, there's two parts of this that are tricky for me. One is there's some there's some failures my kids can do that are good for them and some that aren't. And knowing how to discern, like, what's a failure to let my kid experience, and then what's a failure to intercede on their behalf so that they can not experience. So that's, I'm noticing that there's discernment in that for me. And the other thing I'm noticing is that often when I'm tempted to take responsibility for my kids in ways that aren't beneficial for them, I'm seeking to rescue them from something because I need that.
Yeah.
I'm over-identifying with them, or I see it as a reflection on me, you know? And like for instance, one of the things is, I don't know why this bothers me, but when my kids get amazing things and they're not grateful or appreciative, it just grinds my gears. Mm-hmm. And it grinds my gears, like, if they don't say thank you or this was great or I really enjoyed that, to me. But it's even more so when it's like somebody else is giving them something amazing and they don't express gratitude towards them, and I'm there with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that I want to, like, micromanage their gratitude.
And, right, because it's somehow speaking into your own identity.
Yeah.
And what that person thinks of you, right?
Sure, like, you know, I'm raising entitled kids or something.
Yeah.
You know?
The flip side of that, Matt, is when we just close our eyes to what they're doing and pretend like they're not doing it, right? Which is the next one that is called blind parenting. And that really is when we pretend like everything is fine rather than actively discerning how to engage. Right?
Yeah.
Because you're on the other side. You're saying, I want to know how to engage, but the flip side of that is when people are just, like, closing their eyes to whatever their kid is doing. And that can be, like, simple things of, like, your elementary kid says that they're not hungry or they have a tummy ache because you made stuffed peppers, which happened last night at my house for dinner. And I was like,
that's weirdly
specific.
Because
you don't have a stomach ache. You just don't want to eat stuffed peppers, right? But it more serious, like, I was recently talking to a parent, and their high school kid, after the basketball game, said, like, hey, I'm going to go to a party and I'll get a ride home after. And the mom was like, well, where are you going to be? And he's like, well, I'm just going to be at a party. Well, who are you going to be with? Well, I don't need to tell you. And so the mom, like, looked at the dad and was like, we're not going to let him go. And he was like, oh, he's fine. I'm like, you need to know where your kid is, who they're with, what they're doing. Oh. Like, that is parenting, you know. An even more severe case is if the school calls and says, we're noticing some potential warning signs of depression or, you know, suicidal ideation, and you do nothing about it.
Yeah.
That is blind parenting. You're training your child to navigate life on their own without any wisdom from you. And that's not their role yet. They're not an adult yet. They need you as a parent.
I'm noticing, Christy, like, as I think through, like, when this becomes attractive to me, it's when I'm really in touch with maybe one of these other things you've talked about, like the shame parenting or the get off the shed parenting. and I want to just stay away from that. And I end up just, like, checking out.
Yeah.
I end up, like, shutting down, pulling away, and just not engaging my kids at all because I'm so maybe allergic or aware that my normal instincts aren't helpful. Yeah. So rather than hurt, I'm just going to go off the grid. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I was just going to say, there could be some wisdom in temporarily, like, taking a break, right? So that you don't hurt or harm.
Sure.
But I think blind parenting would be just never return to it, right? So just sort of check out and just think, well, I'll try next time, instead of returning to it and having a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Right. We have to engage. We have to be actively engaging with our kids. Yeah. And sometimes we're going to need a break. Like, sometimes you got to go for a walk. You got to, like, we're going to deal with that tomorrow, but you're still going to deal with it. Yeah. You're not going to, like, just blindly assume that things will probably be okay.
Yes.
You got to get engaged. Yeah. So. Okay.
All right. Last one.
All right. Number 7.
Yeah. We've done talk, bribe, excuse, shame, hover, blind, and the last one is backwards parenting. And backwards parenting is parents just putting their children in charge of defining the way that life works.
Oh. Oh, I thought you said backwoods parenting. I'm like,
that's a different kind of parenting.
What do you got against rural folks?
Backwards. Backwards.
Okay.
Backwards. You know, where you become like kind of the made to order cook for breakfast and just do whatever your kids want. If you have six children, then you're making six different breakfasts. Mm-hmm. You guys don't do that. That's ridiculous.
Okay. Avoid this.
Super time consuming and doesn't work. Yeah. But ultimately your kid then expects to get whatever they want whenever they want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not a realistic, that's not how life works. And so they're going to have a rude awakening. You're not preparing them well. Yeah.
Right.
I will admit that this one did not take place very commonly in our home. But I wonder what the reasons are. I have noticed there's more of it. This, like, helicopter parenting and backwards parenting, I think there's more of it nowadays than there used to be, like, you know, when I grew up. And I think some of that is probably related to, like, trauma from, you know, shame parenting, something like that. And we, as parents, have sort of made vows, like, I'm never going to do this to my kids. But then it's easy, I think, to end up in these other kinds of ways of actually not serving our children as well, where it's like, well, now I'm going to be my kid's best friend and their maid and their servant. And that'll do it. That'll help them grow up like with a healthy sense of self or whatever. And it's just sort of,
I think it comes from
problems.
A good space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it comes from a place of like, I want my kid to feel loved. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they think I'm going to let my child be the center of my whole world. Right. And I'm going to do all this stuff from, because I love them. Mm-hmm. But the reality is then they just think it's all about them. Right. And you can love them even by giving them limited options at limited times. Right. And giving them choice. Yeah. But not just doing whatever they want, whenever they want it.
Yeah. I think that's important. Maybe because it is oftentimes born of, I mean, all of these, honestly, I think all of these parenting mistakes they do stem from us trying to do good things for our kids, honestly.
Absolutely. Right?
So I think that's important to say that that has helped me tremendously to have some compassion for myself, is to realize, like, even in my worst moments, what I'm trying to do, right, is like achieve some kind of goodness for myself or for my kids, right? It's just like, terribly broken, misguided, but at the core, we're trying to like raise good kids. We're trying to like love our children and love ourselves. We're trying to figure this out. And so I think it's important for us to just recognize that, and to recognize that we do make these mistakes out of a desire to love. And so correcting these mistakes is how to basically truly and more deeply and more effectively love our kids, right? So we end up treating them as the center of attention out of a desire to love them, but it's actually helpful for us to realize that isn't actually loving them, because that's not preparing them for life that is not going to revolve around them. You know?
Yes. So let me make sure I got this right. So I shouldn't ask my 14-year-old to wipe my butt either. Like, that would be backwards. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I like the jokes at the end of our podcast more than those comments.
all joking aside about poop, I think that a lot of us, a lot of adults, never felt like they received what they needed from their parents. Mm-hmm. And so part of one of the things that I find most common in me, like, is especially the backwards parenting, is some of us just don't feel like we know what it looks like to be a parent. But we do know what it's like to be a friend or a buddy. Right? So that's much more comfortable for us, right? I know how to be a friend. I know how to be a peer. But then when it comes to like, no, there's some responsibility I have with authority in your life. But what the heck does that look like? I mean, maybe your parents were you know, domineering and abusive, or maybe other authority figures have been domineering and abusive. And so there's no model for how to be a good generative presence. And so I think that's one of the, that's one of the reasons why this feels like a good idea. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
We don't know what it's like to all right, well, carry authority.
Yeah. I am wondering, you know, we've listed these seven now: talk, parenting, bribe, excuse, shame, hover, blind, and backwards. We're kind of running short on time, but we probably need to do like a podcast of like some things we're learning about, like when we've referenced them a bit here, you know, but maybe a follow-up podcast of like ways that we're practices and commitments we have as parents that we actually would wish on other people. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Would that be a good maybe follow-up to this?
Yeah, maybe our listeners even have some of those that they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that we can learn from them, because I think that that'd be really helpful. Yeah. You know, what are the practices, what are the rhythms that you've found to be helpful and impactful as you parent your children? I'd love to hear from listeners on that. And then I'd also love to hear, like, what are we missing? What are the other kinds of parenting styles that you're like, you know, whether it's a mistake or maybe a positive one of like, this is really, let's talk about this too. So
cool.
Yeah.
We don't have 2 hours. Yeah. We just have one.
Just
so
one.
Yeah.
Just one.
I mean, we can record as long as we want, but our listeners are accustomed to not 2 hour podcasts. So, all right. Well, Christy, I appreciate you compiling these. This is your compilation. Yeah. You and Paul kind of pulled this together. I think you should write an article about all these. I think that would be really helpful. So,
thank you.
Thanks for bringing them to us and leading us today.
Yeah. Give yourself grace.
Amen.
We'll give ourselves grace as we parent, and peace, friends.
Peace. See you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Joining our Gravity community is free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast, and you can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Record button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.